All right, so this evening, the plan is to cover Numbers chapters 13 and 14. Some words of introduction for these very important chapters. What we're going to see here in Numbers 13 and 14 provides, frankly, an explanation for a lot of the things that we will see on a go-forward basis in the Pentateuch, in the first five books of the Bible. Of course, we have been through Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus, and we're now working our way through Numbers. But some of the whys, right? Well, here's what we're going to see as we move forward. We're going to see a lot of repeated things in Numbers. Father, if you don't mind, could you go on mute? We're going to see a lot of repeated things in Numbers. For example, there are two censuses in Numbers, at the beginning of Numbers and at the end of Numbers. And then the entire book of Deuteronomy exists, in essence, because of what we're going to discuss tonight. And essentially, to give you the big lesson up front, is that what we will see tonight in Numbers chapter 13 and 14 is that this entire generation of Israelites that the Lord redeemed out of slavery in Egypt will now, at the end of Numbers chapter 14, be doomed to die in the wilderness and not experience the blessings of the land of Canaan. So that is where we are headed. What we saw last time in Numbers 11 and 12 was we saw the tide, as it were, beginning to turn. So at the end of Numbers chapter 9, all was well. The Israelites were in obedience to the commands of the Lord. But in Numbers chapter 11, verse 1, the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And then in Numbers chapter 12, we saw that Miriam and Aaron, the sister and brother of Moses, spoke out against Moses. And so the tide was beginning to turn in Numbers chapters 11 and 12. And as we pick up this evening in Numbers chapter 13, we will see really the turning point for this generation of Israelites, for the book of Numbers itself. So we'll pick up in Numbers chapter 13, verse 1, as a reminder, the Israelites are now at Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran. You can see that in Numbers chapter 12, verse 16. Numbers chapter 13, verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, everyone a leader among them." So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran at the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the sons of Israel. These were their names. From the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zechur. From the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori. From the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. From the tribe of Issachar, Egal, the son of Joseph. From the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun. From the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu. From the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodi. From the tribe of Joseph, from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi. From the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali. From the tribe of Asher, Sether, the son of Michael. From the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Vophsi. From the tribe of Gad, Guel, the son of Machi. These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. But Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. When Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, he said to them, "Go up there into the Negev, then go up into the hill country, and see what the land is like, and whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many. And how is the land in which they live? Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? And how is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort then to get some of the fruit of the land." Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. 21. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob at Lebo Hamath. When they had gone up into the Negev, they came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol. From there they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes. And they carried it on a pole between two men, with some of the pomegranates and the figs. That place was called the valley of Eshcol, because of the cluster which the sons of Israel cut down there. Alright, so here we are, the Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran, if you look on a map, is basically just south of modern-day Israel. The Negev is actually a place that's recognized even today. You can see it on a map of Israel today. It's basically a hill country, as it were, in the southern portion of the land of Israel, and just north of the Sinai Peninsula. So really, in essence, the tribes of Israel are on the verge of Canaan. This is where God has brought them. And you can see in verse 2, the Lord is speaking to Moses, and he says, "Send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel." And we have said this many times before, but the Lord, of course, promised that land of Canaan to Abraham all the way back in Genesis chapters 12 and 15. And so now it seems as though Israel, after these many years, hundreds of years since the time of Abraham, Israel is finally going to go into the land that God had promised to Abraham. And so they put these 12 leaders together. I'm not going to go back through them. I would just note verse 6. Caleb is a very important person in the rest of the story. And in verse 8, Hoshea, who in verse 16, of course, becomes Joshua. Hoshea simply means salvation. Joshua means Yahweh saves. And so Moses changes his name at some point from Hoshea to Joshua, Yahweh saves. And it's interesting here, Caleb is from the tribe of Judah, which eventually becomes the southern kingdom in the wake of Solomon's reign. And Joshua is from the tribe of Ephraim, which in many ways is a stand-in of the northern kingdom. So I just note that and found that particularly interesting in this portion of the narrative. Again, the Negev, verse 17, is the south country of Israel, the hill country. And then in verse 23, Eshcol, there, the valley of Eshcol. Eshcol simply means cluster. So it's a memorial of that particular valley from where the cluster of grapes was cut that the Israelites brought back into the camps as they gave their reports. So all is looking well so far. God has promised to give this land to the tribes of Israel, and so now they're sent in by Moses to scope it out. We pick up in verse 25 to see how the spies reported on the land and the people therein. Verse 25. When they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told him and said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." Verse 28. "Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan." Verse 30. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, The land through which we have gone, in spying it out, is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, or part of the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. And so we see here now that there is this division of the spies. Ultimately, it will be 10 against 2. So Caleb and Joshua will be on the side of the Lord and of Moses, saying that they should go into the land of Canaan and that they should take it. And of course, 10 of the spies now are gathered against Joshua and Caleb to say that they ought not to go. And of course, they're opening their eyes to see what is there, right? What do they see? They see in verse 28, the people in the land are strong. They see that the cities are fortified and very large. And they saw the descendants of Anak. And Anak, that we don't know a lot about Anak. They're described here in the text as being somehow historically related to the Nephilim. Probably that is only an ascription of their size, of course, since the Nephilim were killed. The Nephilim of Genesis chapter 6 were killed off in the global catastrophic flood. And so I think this is simply a relationship between the people that they saw there, the descendants of Anak, who were most likely very large and related then to the legend of the Nephilim, which we saw all the way back in Genesis chapter 6. And of course, in verse 29, Amalek is also there. Amalek, in case you don't remember, is the grandson of Esau. And you have these other tribes in verse 29, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, right? So there are all these people groups, and it's not like Moses didn't know that these people groups were there, and it's not like the Israelites didn't know that these people groups were there. They had been told many times since Abraham that these people groups were there. But nonetheless, they were afraid. Of course, in verse 30, Caleb tries to argue against them, but he, in a sense, verse 31 and following, he gets shouted down by the 10 spies who are causing the people of Israel to fear greatly. Let's pick up the story in 14, verse 1. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness? And why is the Lord Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregations of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they shall be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And so we have here not just the 10 spies who are crying out against Joshua and Caleb, but we see in verse 1 of Numbers chapter 14 that all the congregation of Israel lifted up their voices and cried. And verse 2, all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And of course, they make these ridiculous declarations at the end of verse 2, and they ask these ridiculous rhetorical questions in verse 3, which we have seen them do time and time and time again. And in fact, later on in the chapter, we will see exactly how many times they have done this. But for now, suffice it to say that this should not be news to us as we have studied the Israelites since the book of Exodus. And so they even go so far as to say that their wives and their little ones will become plunder. Verse 3, this will be significant later on in the chapter. And then in verse 4, they want to appoint a leader in place of Moses that might lead them back into Egyptian slavery. Of course, Moses and Aaron fall on their faces, verse 5, and Joshua and Caleb speak out against all of the congregation of Israel, right? And they saw the land, verse 7, it was exceedingly good land. Of course it was, because it was land that the Lord had prepared for his people. Verse 8, if the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us into this land. And so what we see here from Joshua and Caleb is faith in the promises that Yahweh, the covenant God of Israel, has made to his people Israel. We see their faith. And part of that faith comes also in verse 9, this exhortation to the people of Israel to not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land, for they shall be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear. This is a very strong statement of the faith of Joshua and Caleb. And of course, that will be very much in contrast with what we will see in the following verses. Picking up in verse 11, we will find that Moses now begins to plead again on behalf of the tribes of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst?" You see this contrast of the faith of Joshua and Caleb over against the unbelief of the Israelites. The Lord goes on in verse 12 to say, "I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they." We've seen this before, all the way back in Exodus chapter 32, verse 10. God has said this to Moses before. And Moses, all the way back in Exodus 32, responded at that time the very same way he responds now, and that is with intercessory prayer on behalf of the Israelites. Verse 13. But Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear of it, for by your strength you brought up this people from their midst, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people, for you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye, while your cloud stands over them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you slay this people as one man, then the nations who have heard of your fame will say, 'Because the Lord could not bring this people into the land which he promised them by oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness.' But now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations. Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your loving kindness, just as you also have forgiven this people from Egypt until now." This is a tremendous and beautiful intercessory prayer. As I said, if you go back and do the comparison between this prayer and the prayer that Moses prays in Exodus chapter 32, you will see great and many similarities. We see Moses again as the intercessor of the old covenant, the Mosaic covenant. And we said back in Exodus 32, and we say again now, that this is a picture of Jesus Christ and his intercessory prayer on behalf of his people in the new covenant. And I would also point out that in verse 11, God clearly calls out the unbelief of the Israelite people. And this is important, and it's important for us to understand certain portions in the New Testament as well. So just for now, if you would turn over with me to Hebrews, it's a text that I believe that we have been in before as part of our study through the Pentateuch, but I just want to take you there again, Hebrews chapter 4, where the preacher to the Hebrews is addressing this very issue of the unbelief of the Israelites who fell in the wilderness. In fact, if you go back up to Hebrews chapter 3, verse 17, and with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? This is exactly the generation of Israelites that we are talking about now. And to whom did he swear that they should not enter his rest, that is Canaan, but to those who were disobedient? And so we see, verse 19, that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. That is Numbers chapter 14, verse 11. So the exhortation from the preacher, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 1, therefore let us fear lest while a promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you should seem to have come short of it. These are Jews who have believed on Jesus Christ, being exhorted to persevere in their faith in Christ. Verse 2, for indeed we have had good news preached to us, just as they also. But the word they, the Israelites, heard did not profit them, because it was not united by faith in those who heard. For we who have believed enter that rest, just as he has said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. That is a quotation from Psalm 95, although his works were finished from the foundation of the world. And so on. I'm not going to read all the way down through verse 11, but you can see that it is this generation of Israelites that the preacher is bringing to the mind of his hearers and exhorting them not to be like this generation who did not believe the promises of Yahweh, the covenant God of Israel. So, back in Numbers chapter 14. How does the Lord Yahweh respond to Moses' intercessory prayer? Verse 20. So the Lord said, I have pardoned them according to your word. And so we saw the nature of Moses' intercessory prayer, right? His first appeal is to Yahweh himself and his power to deliver and to carry his people. Do you see that? Back in verses 15 and 16. What will the Egyptians say? They will hear about the fact that you killed this people, and they will believe then that you are weak because you could not bring this people, verse 16, into the land which you promised them. And then he recalls Exodus 33:34. The very name of God. The Lord is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness. So he's appealing not just to God himself, but to God's attributes of loving kindness and mercy and forgiveness. And so God says to Moses, verse 20, I have pardoned them according to your word, which you echoed back to me from Exodus 33 and Exodus 34. Verse 21, but indeed, as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. He's appealing back there to verse 15, the nations. He will not give the nations a reason to say that he is not glorious and strong and powerful to do what he has promised. That's what's going on in verse 21. All the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. Verse 22. Surely, all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who spurned me see it. So, the Lord forgives their sin. He pardons them, verse 20. The manifestation of that pardon is that He is not going to kill them. And that's important because they have to create the next generation of Israelites. So He pardons them, and that manifests itself in Him not killing them immediately in the wilderness. But He says that all of these men, verse 22, have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times. They will not go into the land that I swore to their fathers. Okay? So, very interesting thing here in verse 22. I have to ask you, have you been keeping count? Have you been keeping count of the number of times that this generation of Israelites has put Yahweh to the test? And if you answer no, I would say that is completely reasonable of you. But I want to note here something very important. God is keeping count. He is keeping score. And when He judges all men at the end of days, it will be a righteous judgment because God is keeping count. In verse 22, He points out that this generation has put Him to the test 10 times. So, let me rattle those off for you if you'd like to write down the citations and go back and look them up yourself. You are certainly invited to do so. I will list them off relatively quickly. The first time, number 1, Exodus 14, 10 through 12. At the Red Sea, Pharaoh's army is bearing down on the Israelites, and they are in fear and grumble against the Lord. Number 2, Exodus 15, verses 22 through 24, at a place called Marah, where there was bitter water, and they grumbled against the Lord. Number 3, Exodus 16, verses 1 to 3, in the wilderness of Sin, they grumbled because of hunger. Number 4, Exodus chapter 16, verses 19 and 20, in the wilderness of Sin, they had rotten manna because they kept it overnight in disobedience to God's command. Number 5, Exodus 16, verses 27 through 30. Also, in the wilderness of Sin, they went out to gather manna on the Sabbath in disobedience to God's command. Number 6, Exodus 17, verses 1 through 4, they are at a place called Rephidim, and they grumbled and complained against the Lord because of thirst. Exodus chapter 32, this is number 7. Exodus 32, at the base of Mount Sinai, while Moses was at the top of Mount Sinai, they created a golden calf to worship. Number 8, Numbers chapter 11, verses 1 to 3, they're at a place called Taberah. We saw this last time, and they were under adversity, and so they grumbled against the Lord. Number 9, Numbers chapter 11, again, verses 4 through 10, still at Taberah, where they grumbled against the Lord because of hunger and their desire for meat. And finally, here, number 10, in Numbers chapter 14, verses 1 to 3, at Kadesh, they refuse to enter the land of Canaan and express their desire to go back to Egyptian slavery. These are the 10 times that this generation of Israelites has complained and grumbled against Yahweh, and He has reached His limit. Interestingly, in verse 22, Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt, how many were there? There were 10. And now we find in Numbers chapter 14, the Israelites themselves are subject to the number 10. And they will be punished. And their punishment is not death, because in verse 20 they have been pardoned, but their punishment is they will not be the generation of Israelites that will be led into the land of Canaan in fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. Verse 24. But my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil generation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses shall fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to your complete number from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you shall not come into the land in which I swore to settle you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses shall fall in this wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they shall suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness, according to the number of days which you spied out the land, 40 days. For every day you shall bear your guilt a year, even 40 years, and you shall know my opposition. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they shall die. As for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land and who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing out a bad report concerning the land, even those men who brought out the very bad report of the land died by a plague before the Lord. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive out of those men who went to spy out the land. All right, so we see verse 24, Caleb, and later we see Joshua. They are spared because of their belief, which is a picture of them passing into the divine rest by faith in the covenant God of Israel, Yahweh. Verse 25, because God does not want to keep them camped out near their enemies, God commands them to turn and go back toward the Red Sea to create some distance between them and their enemies. At the beginning of now this 40 years that they will wander in the wilderness. Verse 29, these corpses that will fall, this is tied back to the first census in Numbers chapter 1. The numbered men from 20 years old and upward, all of these will fall in the wilderness except for Joshua and Caleb. And of course, back in the beginning of Numbers chapter 14, right, the people were grumbling, verse 3, our wives and our little ones will become plunder. And God says in verse 31, your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in. So God turns their words of unbelief back on their heads and will give their children the land he promised them. So from Numbers chapter 14 to Joshua chapter 1, that's what's happening, is that the old generation of Israelites is dying off. The new generation of Israelites is being prepared to enter into the land of Canaan according to the promises God made to Abraham under the leadership of Joshua, who believed and whose name means Yahweh saves. they will spend 40 years in the wilderness. Verse 33, according to the number of days which the spies had spied out the land, 40 days. Verse 34, and we see there was a quick and divine punishment on those 10 spies who spied out the land and brought back a very bad report in verse 37. They were killed here in Numbers chapter 14. So the God of Israel is calling them to turn away from the land of Canaan and go back toward the Red Sea, which sets up this final scene in Numbers chapter 14, verse 39. And when Moses spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people mourned greatly. In the morning, however, they rose up early and went up to the ridge of the hill country, saying, "Here we are. We have indeed sinned, but we will go up to the place which the Lord has promised." Do you see the folly in this? Another manifestation, frankly, of their unbelief. Because God has spoken, they will not go in. They again do not believe him. Verse 41. But Moses said, "Why then are you transgressing the commandment of the Lord when it will not succeed? Do not go up, lest you be struck down before your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites will be there in front of you, and you will fall by the sword, inasmuch as you have turned back from following the Lord, and the Lord will not be with you." But they went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moses left the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and struck them and beat them down as far as Hormah. So this is a very sad commentary, another sad commentary on this generation of Israelites who rejected Yahweh, the covenant God of Israel, and so were destroyed. And they were ultimately destroyed as they fell in the wilderness over the next 40 years. 10 of them were destroyed immediately because of their bad report, and some number of them were struck down in another manifestation of unbelief as they tried to go up into the land of Canaan under their own power without the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, without Moses, and ultimately, as it says in verse 43, without the Lord himself. They were struck down and beat down. So I will just finish up this evening as we come now to the end of Numbers chapter 14, and which sets the stage for us for the rest of the book of Numbers and the book of Deuteronomy. I would just exhort us all as believers on the Lord Jesus Christ under the terms of the new covenant, let us not be like the Israelites who fell in the wilderness. The reason they fell is not because they did not have the word of the Lord, and is not because the Lord had not made his presence known to them. They fell because of unbelief. So, brothers and sisters, let us press on and persevere in faith, trusting in the promises that God has made to us, to his people, to bring us into the land which he has promised us. Amen.